Mrs. Hartwell, will you please be sworn in, please, by Ms. Godot?
Raise your right hand. Swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
I must ask you the same 5 standard questions I've asked your husband and I've asking everyone that appears before us as witnesses. Number one, are you appearing today and testifying under oath voluntarily?
Yes, I am.
Have you been paid by anyone for your testimony other than expenses coming to Clearwater?
No.
Do you have a lawsuit against the Church of Scientology?
Yes, we do.
Does the Church of Scientology have a lawsuit against you?
Yes.
Has anyone suggested to you that you should state anything but the truth? Or has anyone suggested that you change your testimony for any reason?
No.
Thank you. Now, if you would tell your story in your own words, please.
Well, I think Ernie has covered quite a bit of it, except I would like to say that when I found out I was going into the desert, my heart just sunk because it wasn't where I wanted to go either. Also, I'd like to say that when we did get united with Verdon down there, I realized how brainwashed, that she was cold.
Dawn is your daughter.
Yes. She wasn't the same girl that had left us. I can't quite explain it, except it was just a cold feeling. I was appalled, like Ernie said, with the swearing, the cussing. In fact, I was crying one day and said I'd have to go home to learn to cuss and swear before I could ever survive down there. And then another thing that was real shocking, I was in the shed one day, the wardrobe working, and I heard, I hadn't met Hubbard at this time, and I heard this terrible screaming, filthy language like I had never heard before. I had something in my hand, and it just fell to the floor, and my mouth flew open. I said, "Who in the world was that?" And they said it was the boss, because we weren't allowed to use the word Hubbard because of security reasons. And I said, "You mean the leader of the church speaks like that?" And they said, "Yes, he doesn't believe in keeping anything back." So that was another, quite a shock. The main thing that I disliked, too, was when we first got there, before we could leave the place, we had to be programmed on the lies that we had to tell. If we run into one of our friends, we had to lie to them and tell them that we were just there for a vacation and we had the man's name and everything to give. We had to go 25 miles to use the telephone, and always usually there was somebody with us. We couldn't use the phone. There was no papers. We never read the paper. We were schooled on how to get away from process servers, FBI agents, any government official or any policeman that wanted anything to do with Hubbard. If we had to, there was 4 different ways that they trained us to handle them, even if we had to use mental force, physical force. And that went on for days, that training. First, one of us would be the FBI agent, and the other one would be who we are, you know, until we had it down pat. We also had to lie if we ran into a Scientologist. We were here from Clearwater on a mission, and we were returning. There was no way that we could have our friends and relatives come see us. So we were just like we had been cut off from the world. We worked behind locked doors with curtains always closed. If the utility man or anybody come on the property, we were alerted. We were to stay in as much as possible, not run around, watch our language, their language. I was all right. And we were to hide anything pertaining to the word Scientology, books or anything that would disclose that it was the Church of Scientology. We also had to Anytime we left from one building to another, everything that we carried had to be in sacks. There was nothing that could be visible that had Scientology on it. And that was always a worry. And when we were outside, we were not to use the language that Scientology used. And so you was under constant strain, and I was even afraid to go on lib because I was afraid that I would disclose his hideout by saying something. Fred Rock was put in the RPF because he said the word Scientology on a golf course. So this is how rough it was. We also, there's something I want to say about it. The way they got my marriage license is we had to make a story up about where we were, that we were going overseas because Ron's hideout had been exposed by someone, and they made me to believe it was Ernie that had exposed it. And so he needed our marriage license, and I didn't even question it. And he also needed our birth certificates for Don's and mine. But it wasn't just us, it was everybody in the Los Angeles area that was around there that had to get passports. So their loved ones all thought that they were going overseas. And so that way they couldn't contact them here, where we were. We were given a lawyer's name, an address that we had to memorize. We couldn't leave the base until we had it memorized perfectly, in case there was an accident or that we were ill or in the hospital, and we were to use this lawyer's name and he would come and take care of everything. When they went to the doctors or the dentist, we always used, I used my real name there. I think they used their real name, but they always went by someplace and picked up a fake address and said that we were friends staying with somebody. We weren't from that area. There was always people going to and from the doctors. L. Ron Hubbard believed that anybody that was ill was a double threat to him. One, they couldn't produce, so they were no good to him. Number two, he was terrified of a germ of any kind. And so they were locked up in, I'd say, about a 10 to 12 room. And at one time, there were 13 boys and girls, both in this room, running high fevers, and all of them smoking. And, I mean, you can hardly see who was in there. It was so terrible. And they were treated like an enemy in this room. And because they were. Hubbard, I saw him throw fits. I actually saw him take his hat off one day and stomp on it and cry like a baby. I have seen him just take his arms like this and throw them wide. He's hit girls in the face. And one girl would follow him with a chair. If he sat down, that chair had to be right where he was going to sit. One girl missed by a few inches. She about fell off of it, and she was put in the RPS. And the other girl would carry an ashtray, catching his very ash. They'd have to pop the cigarettes in his mouth when he wanted it. He had one man that would just wash his clothes and change his clothes for him. He had a nurse. He had one woman that did nothing but clean the house. And he had one man that did nothing but cook his three meals a day. And it took him from 6 in the morning till about 10 at night to cook those three meals and prepare them. I was with Hubbard every day for about a month. I should say every night. We would start our daily job. We'd start about 12 o'clock, and we would go at noon, and we would go until the sun came up the next morning, and most of the time without anything to eat after 6 o'clock at night. And so we was eating, working almost around the clock without, except the evening meal. They said that they couldn't, nobody could give me, they could give me any auditing because of my illness, because Ernie was upset and he had me upset, and that as soon as Ernie left, why then they would start and give me real auditing and get me to the doctor. By the way, when they came to sign us up, I explained to them my trouble and I told them that I needed a good doctor, and I did think that maybe auditing would help, and which they promised me both. And so this was one of the, they showed me a picture of the hotel and said that, do you think Hubbard would live in anything any worse than this? So naturally that's where we expected to come, was to a beautiful place. Okay, the RPF down there was, didn't function like it did over here because they had no place for the RPF. Another thing, when we went on base, we were schooled that we had to, it was a bad place for rattlesnakes, scorpions, and of course, like little spiders, we had to wear boots and carry flashlights at night. The RPF had their clothes in boxes, and their mattresses were thrown out on the ground with the spiders and the scorpions and RPF. They had to run everywhere. You couldn't talk to them. I was written up several times for talking to Verdon. I also saw her one day. Every time I would go by doing my work, I would see her dragging her mattress from one shade tree to the other. I said, "What are you doing?" And she was ill. She couldn't be in with the others. And so she was hunting shade and keeping out of the, it's 117 degrees. And she was hunting shade because she was ill. I was, worked one day, ironed out in the heat, out in the sun because it was cooler in the shade. And I, it was 117 degrees then. And without any food the whole day. And at 5:30, I just became desperately ill. And I told him I had to leave. And I staggered quite a ways, about three blocks from where we were shooting the movie up to the where we, the dorm was. And I was staggering. I'd go first into the fence and then into the ditch. It was like I was drunk. But anyway, I just made it to the bunk and just crashed. They came in and woke me up and said at 7 o'clock I had to go down because Hubbard was going to be on the set and I wouldn't do it. And I was written up because I took a 3-hour nap. So this, and another time I complained I had to go home because I wasn't getting treated. I was then bleeding and in quite severe pain. And the way they took me right down to Qual, put me on the meter, said I could go home or could go right to the doctor. And the next night they had us scrubbing the barn. We started at 6 o'clock and we scrubbed that barn till 4 o'clock in the morning. And they had me carrying buckets of water. And this, no, anybody that ran a fever was immediately put out of commission, but anybody that was ill and not running a fever, they were made fun of and ridiculed because they thought more of their body than they did of Hubbard's work. There was no unity. There was no working together. It was like if you were going over here and somebody was coming this way, you couldn't stop and say hello, because then that would stop you and slow you down to get to your point, so you might not get your work done. And one day we were laughing and joking on the job, and the supervisor told us if she ever caught us doing that again, we'd go into the RPF. It was strictly work, no pleasure. If you're in a lower condition, all money stopped coming in, what little bit there was. You didn't get any pay. And you didn't get any libs, so you were just held prisoner. While we were there, when we first got there, in fact, 2 days after we left home, which was about a five-hour trip, my nephew drowned us. And we didn't get word. It took 10 days for them to notify us that my nephew had died. And this was by a letter from my sister that went to Clearwater and then back to where we were. Because they wouldn't give us the telephone call. All our mail was read before it left that base. I wrote three letters to Ernie before one of them got through, and I finally said everything's going great because everything else came back and I had to rewrite it. all the mail, like you said, had to come here and then go to Clearwater. Nearly every time I went to the phone after Ernie left, I had to be guard. There was a guard with us. I never came in alone after that. Oh, by the way, too, when my nephew did die, I got word of it. I demanded that I come in, go into Palm Springs and make a phone call to my sisters. And it took us from 7 o'clock in the morning until about 6:30 that night. They finally get us a broken-down truck. We had to buy the gas, and they gave us 2 hours. If we weren't back in those 2 hours, they were going to call us the police and have us arrested for stealing the truck. I saw men, I don't know how many left the base while I was there, but it was quite a few. I saw grown men, such as my husband, that cried for days, maybe 2 to 3 days, and they were under constant guard before they were allowed to leave. They drove people so close to suicide before they were allowed to leave that base. The women was just constantly crying, and it just tore me up. I also, the last month I was there, was filing Hubbard's orders, and I read this one that I don't know how many times I had to read it for it to really sink in, was that Elaine Waite was going to commit suicide. And Hubbard, this is what the order said, I don't care if Elaine Waite's going to commit suicide or not, but get her off of my land before she does. Now, where was the help? You know, where was the religious counseling? The only time that the word God was used was in vain. And I mean it was used constantly. There was no civil talking to each other. It's all cussing and swearing. I know one night I had to cry. If you cried, you were taken into ethics. So I was laid out on the diving board where I could see all around me, and I had a good cry. But another thing that was shocking, too, was Ernie wrote me a most wonderful letter, and I was so thrilled because he was on course and he was doing so great, and I thought, well, gee, I'll show him. And so I showed it to one of the girls, and she said, you can go right down into ethics. She said, then you get this straightened out right now. They don't want you to be happy. They don't want you to be united. It's just individualism. I saw my daughter very little because she first was in the RPF. Then they put her in isolation again. She got ill. Her fever went up 1 degree and down 1 degree. And she was in there for about 2.5 months in this one room, not allowed to see anybody. You can imagine what that has done to her brain. Then when we did come home, we thought everything was going smooth and everything when the harassment started. The night that it was 12:30 at night when Mary Louise came to my home, and she kept trying to get me out of the house. I was the mother is the only one that would know the feeling I had. I opened the door, and I would really rather a face there that night for my daughter. And yet I can't tell you why, except her face, her eyes, and her attitude. I refused to leave the house. And then And I can't really remember anything that went on, but I know it went on all the time that Ernie was with Alan Hubbard. And finally, she wanted to know if we were afraid for our lives, and I told her yes. And then the police told us we should report that. And then the next day we were told we had to move out. And then the next day they came on my job. I worked at MGM where it was strictly guarded with millions of dollars of money in costumes. And I turned around and my daughter was there. And she came, I told her not to come in again. She was jeopardizing my job. She came back two different times, brought Alan Hubbard with her once. The last time she told me that she says, I want you to know that nobody has been murdered over anything as this of yet, but it's going to get a lot worse before it gets any better. And I started to cry and I said, yes, I know it is. Then she put her arm around me and said that she loved me.
Thank you, Mr. Bates.
No, no.
Sorry.
Mr. Hartwell, how... I think we've heard enough as far as your narrative. I'm just going to ask you a few questions that... And then I'll turn it over to Mr. Kaldivak. It just seems incredible that a couple like you sells everything and wants to be a dancer and maybe make movies. And you're given this carrot, which is a brochure of sparkling clear water, and you end up in a desert. And you can't leave. And your marriage is about to fall apart. You're separated, you're divided, you're conquered. And your daughters want nothing to do with you. And you're destroyed financially, mentally. That's just difficult for me to believe, and I'm sure everyone in this room. And I, frankly, don't know where to start to ask you questions. I think you've said it all. So for the time being, I will just yield, and maybe Mr. Kaldivak has something to ask you.
I think Mr. Hartwell has one more thing, though.
And there was another time that was really terrifying, and this was when Ernie had all his meetings with him alone and left me out of it. But this one, why Alan said I had to be there because I had to sign the paper. Alan Hubbard was the man sent from California to handle us.
Any relation?
No. They say he isn't, anyway. So we went down to the hotel room, or motel room, to meet with him. We sat alone. And there was both my daughters and their husbands, and they had flown my daughter and her husband in from Indio just to use against us. And they came in the night before, and yet they hadn't even called us. They hid my other daughter's car so we wouldn't know that she was there. And we started talking, and all of a sudden, another one that was with Alan Hubbard, I don't know him, I don't know what he looks like, because I was so terrified. But he all of a sudden jumped up and started to yell at Ernie, saying what a beast he was, what a terrible man I had, because he was trying to extort money from the church, he was no good, that I knew what was right and what was wrong, I needed to get rid of him, I needed to divorce Ernie and get back into the church because I knew what was right. And finally, Ernie got me out of the room. It seemed to me like it went on for hours. I don't know how long it did, but to me it just seemed forever. But Ernie tried to get me to drive home, but I couldn't because I felt like if I left the room that day, I'd never see my daughters again, and it was close to being true.
Where are your daughters now?
One is in Las Vegas, which we never can talk to her, and the other one's in L.A.
Are they still within the Church of Scientology?
Yes.
Why couldn't you leave? Did you didn't have a car? Were you that far out in the desert? Or were you broken spiritually? And
I was still hanging on to... I had to get to a doctor, and with Ernie coming home and no job to go to, he didn't have the money to get me to a doctor. And I had been told that if I didn't get attention soon, that it would be cancer. And so I was still hanging on to them getting me to a doctor, which they did in September. They finally got me to a doctor.
Well, did Mr. Hubbard cure your cancer?
Oh, yes. I wouldn't know what he had. No, he couldn't cure anything. He terrified of any sicknesses.
Mr. Caldwell.
It's hard to ask questions after that. Do you like to take a break?
I'm fine.
Okay.
One thing, what year for the record was did this take place?
78, 9.
Well, when did you leave? When did you leave for Clearwater and end up in the desert? What year was that, and how long were you in the desert?
It was, I think it was May of 79 we went. Ernie came back in July. I came back in October.
Did you ever make it to Clearwater until today?
Yes, a year and a half ago, I was here for the Tenney trial.